Settling back with a brain full of vapor, Tipper can picture teenage Susie, a squat girl lost in a giant concert tee, shuffling around with a head full of Taylor polynomials and math rock. Now, Susie sips her tea. Okay. One day, this young rebel comes by with a proposition. He wants to go to the fair, just me and him, and try out this new ride they have there. Me? Susie sets her empty can on the floor. I'm 15. He's 18. I think this is the best idea I ever heard. Friday night comes. I lie to my parents. He picks me up. No auto drive for this guy. And off we go. I'll paint the scene. The rides, they were totally different then. No AI, no protocols. The operator pulled a lever, it started up. He pushed the lever, it shut down. Simple. But this new ride, this was something special. The Gentle Giant, it was called. Big legless guy, about 30 feet tall. Long arms, kind of like a gorilla. You'd get in a kind of transparent ball, like a giant hamster ball, and he'd pick you up and, well, there wasn't much to it, really. He'd kind of wave you around, pass you from hand to hand. Nothing like the Screamosaurus, that's for sure. But me? Susie sat up. My generation? This was brand new. This was scary. Because it wasn't just a machine, like what we grew up on. It was thinking. It was deciding. It was unpredictable. And you were literally putting yourself in this robot's hands. Susie pauses, settling lower in her hammock. Well, as you can bet, there were lots of safety precautions. Full body pat down, two riders only, waivers, harnesses, the whole thing. We go through the rigmarole. We get in the big ball. And while we're waiting, we look up at the giant's face, and that's when this boy tells me his plan. The ventilation fans have shut off, the air slowly growing warm with contained heat. Tipper tries to remember if she's ever seen this ride, which sounds, as Susie says, intensely boring. A big robot picking you up, then putting you down? So what? Well, my brave new boyfriend... It turns out he's been studying. Susie takes out a new tee. The Gentle Giant has a pretty sure grip, but this guy thinks, okay, maybe if we both get up at the same time, throw ourselves against the wall, maybe if we time it just right, he says, we can get the giant to, in a phrase, drop the ball. And then what? Tipper narrows her eyes. You would die? What's the point? Here's the point. This ride was special. It was new. There were magazine stories. There were giant crowds. If the giant screwed up, even just once, but only because you guys broke the rules. But that's just it. I mean, picture it. A nice young girl, her handsome boyfriend, out on their very first date. Maybe they're a little foolish, but who isn't at that age? And then suddenly... Thanks to this crazy, unreliable robot. Tipper sighs. Of course. It's a typical manual ploy. Do something insanely stupid, then blame it on a robot. They'll do anything to sow distrust and fear. Sending a message, Tipper says. Exactly. Well, we're sitting there, arguing, and all of a sudden the ride starts up. At first, I can hardly tell what's happening. The change is so gentle, so precise. Looking through the plastic, I see the fair sinking away. We're up in the sky. Now the real excitement starts. Rising, dipping, whirling, flying. All of it amazingly smooth. It's like being cradled. That's what I keep thinking. Like being rocked to sleep in giant hands. I look over at my boy. I can see he feels it too. Except he has a different reaction. It makes him angry. Around and around. Susie mimics the motion, sketching lemniscates with her can of tea. Now it comes. My guy nudges me, unlocks my harness. We stumble to the wall. Get ready, he says.
Well?
Tipper prompts when Susie falls silent. You know, I really liked that kid. Susie takes back the vape. I can't deny it. He was driven. He was passionate. I was 15. She loads a cart, checks the light, lays down the vapor without tasting. So we jumped together. Wham! Right into the wall. Her hands come together, palm to palm, making her hammock bounce and sway. First, there's an awful feeling, total vertigo. We lie together, pressed up against the plastic. Suddenly, we're floating, weightless. The guy told me we'd be okay. A couple bruises, maybe a broken finger. We wouldn't fall more than 15 feet. But right then, I really believed it was happening. I really believed we were going to die. Stillness. Susie's hand hovers. We're sinking. Then suddenly, we start to rise. Slowly, like a baby in its father's arms. We're high up now, looking down at the giant's face. It was a simple design, all metal with big round eyes. I realized then he'd been in control the whole time. He really was gentle, more tender than any living thing. And I felt this incredible sense of sureness. I wanted to be him, you know, like that robot. I want to be that strong, that caring, that reliable. Susie remembers the vapor, considers it a moment, puts it back in its case. So that was it for my big rebel romance. I looked at my boy. He was slamming himself into the wall, almost crying, shouting, "Help me, Susie, help!" And I just stared, because it was suddenly so clear to me. Susie grins. It was so obvious who was the better man. During peak hours, the fairway develops an edgy vibe. Fringe girls go slouching along in rancher outfits, homesteader gingham and cowgirl boots, the remnants of jobs so impossibly long gone that no one even remembers anything but the clothes. Their boyfriends sip from big gulp sodas spiked with ground brew hallucinogens, recipes cooked up in underground labs hidden in tunnels made by well-digging drones. Sometimes one of them will pause and talk to Tipper. Sad boys, aimless boys, breathing in her face the caramelized fog of their illiterate conversation, breath rich with the stink of the flavored syrups they add to their drinks to mask the chemicals. Tipper waits beside the haunted house, in the little alley that leads to the trailers, clutching her phone like a plastic amulet. Above the gabled roof, the Screamosaurus lifts a shrieking rider, chews him in foam jaws, and gulps him down its waterslide throat. A group of robo-spooks leave the house by a back door, two rubber-skinned frogmen and a stooped Dracula. They carry a limp figure between them, a damaged werewolf who dangles like a cadaver from their arms. Heading for the repair station, no doubt. It's a perennial problem around the house. Rowdy boys like to kick and abuse the exhibits. A kiddie ride like the snake doesn't see a lot of business at this hour, and Tipper's been given the rest of the night off. She checks her phone, knowing it's pointless. The only kind of phone Luke would use is a kind made of two cans and a string. Hey. Quiet suddenly. He's here. Dark against the glare of the virtual arcade, he steps aside to let the crew of spookbots shuffle by. His pale skin glows an eerie yellow in the light of the nearby picnic area. Ready? Hands in pockets, Luke tips his head toward the parking lots. Tipper hesitates. The thing is, Luke waits, expressionless, while she works up her nerve. The thing is, Tipper says, do you kind of have a second? I sort of promised someone we'd meet with her first. Someone? Before Tipper can answer, Luke gives a jump. Two shadows have manifested on either side of him, inhumanly still, crowding in like mafia toughs.
Little boy?
The voice of the left figure is shrill.
You've been a bad boy, haven't you? I can always spot a naughty little boy.
Luke stumbles back as a woman steps forward, lifting a hand to her gashed and bleeding throat. It's the murdered bride, one of Tipper's favorites.
Oh, you best beware, naughty boy. Mother is up above, watching us all.
The bride lifts her dark-ringed eyes to the house's gothic facade. Tipper laughs at Luke's expression. It's okay. I know these guys. Hearing her voice, the two spookbots step back, edging into the light of the picnic area. The murdered bride tips her head back, sluicing blood, which dribbles down her décolletage into a culvert between her breasts. Next to her, the mummy clutches his stray bandages, glints of eye and tooth and bone peeking through the windings on his head. Says the mummy. And then, at a skeptical glance from Luke, Luke straightens his jacket.
What are these? Your chaperones?
Kind of. Tipper offers a hand. Come on, this'll only take a minute.
Mother hates for her children to be late.
The bride shakes her head, and as Tipper draws Luke into the alley, the spookbots shuffle forward to escort them inside. The murdered bride leads the way to a service entrance concealed in a thorn-grown porte cochere. The thorns retract. The door creaks open, revealing a tipsy staircase.
Hurry, please.
The bride lifts her skirts.
We mustn't keep Mother waiting.
Up to the second floor, down a dark main hall. The house is one of the newer rides, a collective artificial mind. 30 rooms host 72 independent robots. The whole fantasia revolves around a gadget called the Morbid Eye, a pulpy, brainish thing that uses a compressed air system to levitate through the corridors. The eye coordinates every system, HVAC to crowd flow to the spookbots themselves. Fishmen and lizardmen, ghouls and ghosts. The eye leads them all, but only primus inter pares. The spookbots are communal, telepathic, autonomous. Carter once told Tipper that the haunted house is a lot like an old computer program, every component neatly encapsulated. Even to the all-seeing morbid eye, the spookbots are mysterious and unpredictable, free-roaming ghosts in a grand machine.
We're very lucky.
The bride pauses in the armory to adjust her skirts.
Mother will be taking her supper at this hour. She's ever so much nicer when she's feasting on a long slab of rare meat.
Carter's rooms are in the center of the house. Their little group enters a gloomy study. At the central desk, Carter waits to receive them, working at a toothsome and bloody stake. Like most of the ride, the furniture here is lightweight micacore, cobbled together by the spooks themselves. With 25 humanoid robots on staff, they can knock together the whole mansion in a single day. Carter has a heavy tome in her lap, dark shapes writhing on an embedded screen. She slaps it shut.
Evening, kids.
The murdered bride bows over her chair.
I've brought them, Mother, just as you asked. I do try to be a good girl. But now look at me. I've gone and bled all over my dress.
Yes, I see that. Okay, bride, I'll take it from here.
Leering with horrible enthusiasm, the bride takes the mummy by the arm.
Thank you, Mother. I'm so glad I could be useful. But do, oh, do be strict with these two children. They are very naughty and spoiled, too.
I'll keep that in mind, bride. Thanks.
As they pass by Luke, the mummy can't resist a last comment.
Ugh.
Tipper turns to watch as the spookbots stagger out. What must it be like, she wonders, living in this place year upon year, day and night? But the obvious answer makes her laugh. It must be like caring for a huge, deranged family.
I won't take a lot of your time.
Carter comes around the desk.
Susie says she's given you the night off. Guess you two are heading out for some puppy love.
Not exactly, ma'am.
Luke is curt. Tipper can feel him tensing beside her. Carter, too, goes unusually still.
Right. Well, before you do whatever it is you'll be doing, I have something I wanted to run by you.
Carter picks up the tome, flips to the embedded screen. Tipper braces for something shocking, but it's only a spookbot in the display, snarling fangs and a drooping fabric tongue, a burst of hair over a ripped check shirt.
Look familiar?
Carter sticks a toothpick between her teeth. Luke considers the image, shrugs.
No.
Carter swings the book from side to side, making sure they get a good look.
Well, this here, this is Puppy. Puppy's a part of our team here at the haunted house. Our resident werewolf, you might say. And I'll let you in on a trade secret. He's one of our most advanced and expensive machines. Puppy's got a Croatian hair extrusion grid, a chemical electric body-to-brain feedback module, a moral module based on the soul of a border collie. Puppy's only wish in life is to bring thrills and joy to little boys and girls.
Carter slaps shut the book.
Here's the rub. 2 hours ago, while I was helping a sick visitor, someone walked in, held Puppy down, and poured 50 pounds of birdshot and epoxy down his throat. So I thought I'd inquire if y'all might know anything about that.
Luke's face is resolutely bland. Tipper remembers the troop of spookbots who left the house when they came in. Is Puppy going to be okay?
Puppy?
Carter tosses the book onto the table.
Puppy's built for this shit. Puppy's also insured for a pretty purse of money. My concern goes way beyond Puppy. I'm talking to you, son. You and your friends. You've been spending a lot of time around the grounds.
Luke blinks.
And? And?
Carter grins, exposing an impressive spread of cigarette stains.
Y'all been having a good time?
We.
Carter cuts him off.
You seemed to be having a good time last night when you jammed up the gears of my friend's ride.
That was a joke, I know.
Carter wraps the MicaCore table.
I guess the kids who busted up my werewolf robot, they also thought they were playing a pretty funny joke.
Luke's eyes narrow.
I had nothing to do with that, ma'am. Ask Tipper.
Carter's nod is calm and slow, every bit as lazy as a branch of sage bobbing in a Sonoran wind.
Right. No one saw a thing. Pretty convenient how that works.
Luke parts his lips, shows his palms, shakes his head. Carter sighs and pushes off the table. In the back of the room, there's a multi-paned window looking down on the mansion's central yard. Carter hits a button, and the panes wink and flicker,
becoming screens that show views of different rooms. Moonlit bedchambers, grisly dungeons, hordes of gleefully screaming kids. The views are jumpy, jouncing like old horror flicks, and Tipper realizes she's looking through the eyes of 6 dozen robots, the congregant POV of the house's host of spooks.
"I got 6 dozen witnesses to everything that happens in this place," Carter says. "Full surveillance in every room. And wouldn't you know, amazing as it seems, none of these ever-vigilant robots of mine has any idea what happened to our dear puppy. Son, you got any idea why that might be?"
Arms folded, she looks over her shoulder, and Tipper feels chilled, like it's Dracula himself standing there in shit-kicking boots. Luke says nothing. Carter sighs.
"Well, I'll tell you. It's because they don't want to know. 2 dozen potential witnesses, but when this crime went down, they all blinked at once. Even Puppy himself. He's got a belly full of industrial resin, but I guarantee when we get him working again, he won't say a thing. So riddle this riddle for me, if you can. Why would a robot equipped with sensory capabilities approaching clairvoyance fail to notice a couple of boys holding him down and filling him full of beans?"
Carter pronounces the word clairvoyance. Tipper glances at Luke again, who seems calmer now, like he knows where this is going.
"I don't know," Luke says. "You're the woman who runs this place. You tell me." "I'm the woman who runs this place." Carter bites a thumbnail, looking at the screens. "That's one way of looking at it. Another is to say this place runs itself. All these spooks and ghouls, they've got their own priorities. And their top priority, number one, is taking care of the kids who come through. Keeping those kids safe and happy and out of trouble. The client's always right, even when he's wrong. Well, that philosophy leads to some pretty funny decisions, like, for instance, not ratting out or spanking any troublemaking thug who comes through here. Do I understand it? I have to say I don't. I say a bad apple's just a bad apple. And the truth is, a lot of the kids in this country smell to me like some pretty rotten fruit."
Carter turns, sets her hands to the back of the mockwood chair, and looks at Luke from under bristly gray brows. Tipper understands. It's a weird fact of modern life. Privacy has actually been increased by machine surveillance. When people spy on each other, there's an innate urge to meddle. Robots are infinitely more scrupulous, to a fault.
"Here's the point."
Carter's hands tighten.
"Over the past 4 days, we've had 13 rides at this fair get jammed, damaged, graffitied, sabotaged, or generally screwed with. And nobody knows by who. Some of these accidents, we're seeing sophisticated methods. Radio hacks that go deep into the brain. I'm talking battlefield shit. The kind of crap our lovely government uses to make the enemy drones attack their own people. The rides aren't talking. To them, it's all human error. Me? I've got another theory. I think we have some serious assholes coming through here. Criminal elements, vandals, saboteurs. And if I catch hold of them, I'm not going to be as kind and forgiving as these robot friends of ours. If I catch a hold of them, believe me, these guys'll wish it was a werewolf on their tail."
Finally, Luke speaks.
"If you don't mind my saying, ma'am."
"I do mind your saying."
Carter lifts the chair, thumps it down.
"I can't accuse you of a thing except what I know. And it happens that the stunt you pulled with Snake, that was a lot more stupid than illegal.
but I'm not worried about your future, son. It's Tipper I asked to come here. It's her I want to talk to.
Carter looks at Tipper for a long time, the creases in her face slowly coming to seem less stark, more like the wear and tear inflicted on a loving but overburdened mother.
Four words, kid. Take them to heart. Susie loves that ride.
Carter thumps the foam chair on each syllable.
I'm not talking hot and bothered love like your epically raging teenage feelings. I mean the real stuff. Dogs and babies. If anything happened to that stupid metal monster.
Tipper holds Luke's arm and squeezes, terribly sorry for how awkward this evening has become.
I know, Carter, but really, I promise.
Amy, Carter corrects her. I've been traveling with Susie for 18 years. I'm Amy to her, and I'm Amy to you. You know we used to run a ride together?
She nods deeply, as if Tipper has denied it.
Yep. An old haunted house, one of the first. 6 rooms, 10 units, with Susie and me doing all the training. All night, I'd see her running the routines, tutoring those robots, teaching them human behavior. When a scream is a good scream, when a scream is a bad scream, how to tell the difference between 1,000 different kinds of laughs. She has the touch, Susie does, like no one else. And the reason's this. When Susie looks into the eyes of a machine, she doesn't see a machine. She sees a soul, same as the one in you or me. That's why her rides are always the best. That's why they're the safest. That's why people want to ride them again and again. It's a talent. It's a gift. And it's not something to be screwed with. It comes down to this.
Carter comes forward and holds Tipper's shoulders, staring into her eyes. And Tipper wonders what Carter's seeing there. A full-blown soul? A busted machine? Or maybe just a girl who's a little bit of both?
Trust, Carter says. You think about that as you're tearing up the town tonight.
She turns back to her steak, her screens, her big family of monsters.
Oh, and while you're at it, have yourselves a real fun time.
A junkyard. That's how Tipper thinks of the Fringe. A junkyard covering half of America, full of scrapped and outmodded machines. Except these machines are the kind you can't throw out when they're no longer needed. The kind whose main function is watching TV. The kind who run on soda pop and corn-fed beef. Human machines. Superfluous and unwanted. She pulls her eyes from the sprawl of lights, checks the dashboard, and clamps her hands to the wheel.
Easy.
Luke touches the steering wheel, giving her a bit of reassurance.
No problem, right? Looks like you might want to ease off the pedal. Keep your eye on those proximity lights.
Tipper eases off the gas, slowing by an amount imperceptible to her, but plenty salient to the computer-driven cars all around. The pedals are almost too far away to reach. She has to stretch to hit the brake. By contrast, the steering wheel's right under her nose. In the NASCAR seat of Luke's jury-rigged courier truck, Tipper sits in a nest of buckles and screens. Luke, beside her, taps the proximity monitor, the color-coded warnings for the four sides of the car.
Be careful with these guys, okay? If it's in the red for over half a minute, it gets called in as a violation. 3 violations, they'll log it as a malfunction. That could get us a repair drone on our tail.
Tipper nods, tongue between her teeth. Outside, shipping rigs and long-distance taxis tool along at a droningly steady speed, exactly 130 miles per hour. When she looks out the light-adjusting windows, the cars seem locked in a shared inertial frame, sitting still while blacktop and scenery stream by. Occasionally, there'll be a coordinated shuffle, simple flocking programs producing an elegant, emergent waltz that lets an ambulance or repair drone speed ahead. Then Tipper has to shift with the pattern, breathless and zen-like, focused on simulating the precision of a machine. Up on this highway, it's auto drive only. The world's least forgiving video game. She flicks her eyes to Luke. So this is the big plan for tonight? Hanging out in high-speed traffic? He smiles. You're doing amazing. It's kind of fun, right? Warning chimes. Tipper checks her alerts. A tanker in the left lane wants to get off. She steers by the screen embedded in the dash, which gives an overhead view of the scanned environment. It really is like playing a game. I feel like a bird. Her laugh surprises her, the silly joy of it. No, I mean really, that's how it feels. He grins, feeling it with her. Take the next exit. You'll want to start getting over soon. Tipper flicks on the signaling program, sending out a brief pulse of encoded vector arrays. She checks the windows. Nothing out there but the usual sprawl. Where are we going? Little place I like to call the asshole of America. Thought I'd take you on a tour. Of an asshole? Fun, fun. A long silence. When she looks over, he's got that expression boys get sometimes, unexpectedly vulnerable and shy. No, he says, turning to the window. Of me. It's been a strange evening. Tipper began it by fixing Luke's car. Tapping commands by habit, she plowed through screens of legalese, while Luke lay back in the passenger seat with a hand-rolled joint. Every so often, he asked her how it was going. Okay. Some of the work she did by voice input, some by hand. She wondered how much Luke had been following. I'm logging the ID tags now. Voice, eyes. You realize that to go through with this, I'm going to have to be registered as an approved operator? Luke shrugged. Yeah? Yeah. Like, if we go all the way with this, I could get in your car at any time and start driving. Yeah? She grinned at his casual attitude. So, you're fine with that? He shrugged. If you are. Tipper turned back to the dash. All right, then. What's your social? And that set up the theme of the evening. They were taking things quickly tonight, sharing vital details before they'd shared much more than a kiss. Punching in the last codes, Tipper turned to Luke. That's it. Su caro es mi caro. Now. We're both registered drivers. I hope you trust me. She squirmed out of the deep NASCAR seat, making room for Luke to edge in, but he pulled her back. Hey, where are you going? Tipper glanced between him and the wheel. What do you mean? You're not... You're a registered driver now. Wanna drive? Tipper tested the clumsy pedals, the undersized wheel. I should let you know, I'm not exactly... What word did she want to use? Skilled? Experienced? I'm not very good at this. He shrugged. I trust you. With your life? Sure. How could anyone really mean that? And yet, Luke hit the switch that engaged lockdown, sealing the doors and the trailer compartment, puffing the temper-fit foam of the seats. Go for it. I'll tell you the turns. Tipper started up the sensor system, fumbling at the switches. Suddenly, his hand was over hers. Whoops, Not that one.
Tipper laughed. What did I just almost do?
Something bad.
He spoke in his usual calm way. Then, with a smile,
something extremely bad.
She laughed. And just like that, they were kissing, his lips over her laughing mouth, their teeth knocking together as she responded with clumsy surprise. He held her until the surprise became excitement, then dropped back into his usually lazy pose.
I want you to know, Tipper stammered. I mean, after everything Carter was saying, I do too.
You do what?
Trust you, she whispered.
He hit the starter, fired up the engine.
Let's move.
All through the drive, Tipper had been in a funny state, hovering somewhere between delight and annoyance. Boys, she thought, what could you do with them? Crazy, maddening, incomprehensible boys. Being with Luke brought back memories of home, that house full of older brothers, where every day meant a new joke or taunt or impromptu wrestling match. Tipper's oldest brother, Timmy, had worked at the service station, sitting around watching robots change oil. It made him act strange, all that boring work. When he came home, he'd just sit and stare at Tipper, like she was only another machine. Staring and staring, until at last she couldn't take it. What, Timmy? What is your problem? Then he'd laugh and whoop, thrilled at getting any kind of reaction. None of her other brothers had jobs at all, and it was always worth a heart attack an hour trying to do her homework with them prowling around. They made a sport out of messing with the cleaning bots, flipping them over, kicking them around, triggering the auto-repair alarms. Instead of waiting for the repair drones to arrive, Tipper would fix the bots herself, which usually involved nothing more than talking them through their diagnostic routines. And while she sat with the things in her lap, murmuring into the mics, her brothers would lounge around, sucking beers and teasing her.
Maybe you could just kiss it and make it better, Tipper.
Guys, shut up.
Then, out of nowhere, they could be entrancingly nice, taking her out to show her the projects they'd been working on in the barn. Old Corvettes on blocks, pinball tables they were building from scratch. And with their big, greasy hands lying over hers, they'd guide Tipper through the cleaning of spark plugs, the setting of windows, the wiring of solenoids to EOS switches. Anyway, her brothers were a hell of a lot nicer than Dad. Thinking about Dad, his rages, his they-drove-me-to-it attitude makes Tipper give a twitch and jerk the wheel, almost veering into the side of a commuter van.
Whoa, Luke says. Look, you're okay. Just wait for this guy to pass. You'll see the ramp.
In another moment, they're bumping down the interchange, descending into the bright yellow dots of suburbia. The sprawl of light starts right where the highway ends. For a moment, Tipper has a panicked feeling, like she really is heading home. Same wide streets thronged with auto-driving taxis, same crowds of nobodies, same adobe bunkers, each in a plot of dark solar panels that used to be a lush green lawn. The fringe. A sign by the road is flashing a helpful advisory. Tippely Smith, are you lost? Auto drive malfunction? Honk twice for assistance. They've been driving around the same block for too long, killing time, and the street-side monitors have picked up the aberration.
All right, here we go.
Luke calls up a map. Even a dyed-in-wool manual is compelled to respect the usefulness of dynamic mapping.
Go straight at this next intersection.
But there's nothing there.
Tipper checks the map, the windows. The area Luke indicates is all blacked out,
an abyss of darkness in the lamp-bejeweled town.
Oh, there's something there.
Luke sits back, savoring his air of manly mystery. Tipper lets him have his fun. Pushing the car forward at precisely the recommended speed, she hits the edge of the blacked-out land. Suddenly, she understands. At the end of the road is a ditch. Across the ditch is a bridge, and beyond the bridge is a gate and fence. The signs everywhere are entirely unnecessary. Tipper knows what's beyond this point.
This way.
Luke points right. They drive along the fence, the reflective signs flashing by in a menacing strobe. Warning, warning, warning. Restricted, restricted, restricted. Controlled, controlled, controlled. On the car's display, there's nothing to see. To the mapping software, this is nowhere, non-existent land.
There's a turn up here. It's kind of hard to spot.
Luke leans into her.
There.
The fence veers away. A dirt road rises up a silhouetted ridge. Tipper flicks on the headlamps for the first time that night. Between the dingy bursts of desert bushes, she can see the dark land dropping away, a blackness that seems to deepen as they rise. Luke guides her off the road.
Slow now. There's a certain spot.